Welcome to the August 4th, 2021 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District. I'm going to ask Director Slauson if he'd be so kind as to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You, and just for procedural purposes, could you call the roll, please?
Absolutely. Director Beckard?
Here.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here. And we have our council in-house, so we will proceed. We are going to start with, I understand we have someone wishing to do public comment, but before we do that, could I ask the board secretary if she would read the guidelines, please?
Sure. A couple of reminders for participating in EMWD board meetings virtually. One would be to avoid creating acoustic feedback. Please mute your device during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Thank you.
Very good. We will go to our public comments this morning. This is for people that have general public comment related to things that are not on our agenda this morning. And I understand we have Mr. Dan Massetti, is it, sir?
Yeah.
Please come up to the podium. Welcome. Thank you for coming. We give our public speakers about 3 minutes to express themselves. So
I'll try to keep it really brief.
Be my guest, sir.
Okay. What I'm here to discuss, I've been trying to contact the through the board and the conservation amount. What I have is I have about 150 acres that I want to put into the multi-species habitat. Unfortunately, I don't have enough water for my wells to do that. So I had been discussing with Maria, and over a year ago, on what I could do to, I need to plant my property. I have water to, I believe, 120 or 140 of those acres. And I just need to get more water. I need about 5 acre feet per month. And, of course, I can't afford it at the regular rates. And when I got my water, I asked for to use water on this. I'm zoned for agriculture, but I'm doing stuff like planting oak trees, which are long since disappeared in the area, and I planted, maybe 100 and some on the property, and I'm using a tremendous amount of water just to get them so they don't die. I think I lost 3 oaks, and I'll probably lose some today unless I get water to all of them. But I'm looking to get 5 acre feet. I put in my request. I have, I think, depending, maybe 15 to 17 people, maybe 20 people at times. I have 3 residents on the ranch, and that's what I'm trying to. And I've met to try to get a meter. I discussed that with Maria, and it's just like I'm hitting a stone wall, and I'm getting charged in tier, wasteful, and I'm not wasting my water at all. It's all being used. In the 30s, I understand that the stream that runs through my place flowed, and Fish and Game actually planted trout. But, the needs of the water company is really important. And, there's people, a lot more people than there were. I mean, since we landed on the moon, there's twice as many people on this planet. But we have a thing called the multi-species habitat, and that has been okayed by the board. And I'm not sure about East Metropolitan Water District, but every time you do anything, you need to set aside land. Very few people want to do this, but me as an individual person, that's the reason I bought my land. I picked the land because it had certain animals on it, and I protected and preserved them for a long time, and I planned on putting a lake. Since then, I've retired, and now I want to spend my whole time concentrating on the business of the multi-species habitat, and then I will turn over what's that with all the restrictions to my kids, which I've already done. I retained an environmental easement on the property. So what I'm looking for is some help to get this. I'd like to show you what I'm doing, show them the plans. I've done the engineering. I know what it's going to cost. Right now I have a water line that goes to all my properties, but it's ridiculously expensive, and I need to have more water. And if I took all the water with your accounts, I'd be using a tremendous amount. It'd be $20,000, $30,000, $40,000
a month. Sir, we're bumping up against the 3-minute mark.
Okay.
But let me be. I'm going to have our general manager assign somebody to work for you, and I'm going to ask that the report come back to the board on what we've resolved. We'd be happy to help you if we can, and I do appreciate you coming here today to share your thoughts with us.
Hey, thank you very much.
So if you wanted to, the lady in the back there, April Cody, would be happy to get your information. We will make sure that we have someone work with you on that. With that, I don't believe we have any other requests to speak this morning. We are going to go to our item 2, which is recognitions. And I understand, Joe, you are going to lead us in that.
Yes, good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. It's my privilege today to bring before you a proclamation to honor the career and service of Hope Smythe, who has been serving as the executive officer at the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board since 2017. In fact, I believe Hope is on the line with us today. Hope has served at the Regional Water Quality Control Board for the past 34 years, and she has been a partner to stakeholders, including EMWD, on various initiatives and programs to improve the water quality for millions of residents in our region. Noteworthy, I've had the pleasure to work with Hope on the Quail Valley Septic Sewer Program, and frankly, her approach, her collaboration, her reliance on science and data and facts to be able to navigate regulations and support our funding request was key in having us advance and complete the first phase of sewering in Quail Valley. And we're very appreciative of the fact that the regional board continues to be our partner as we advance a solution for sub-area 4 Quail Valley. So I just wanted to express on behalf of the board and EMWD management our sincere appreciation for Hope, for her service, not only to us, but to the entire water industry through her career spanning more than 3 decades. And we wish her health and happiness in her upcoming retirement end of this month. With that, Hope, are you on the line?
I am, Joe. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, go on.
No, go ahead, Hope.
I was just going to express my thanks to Joe and the rest of Eastern staff and the board of directors. I think Joe said it very well that, you know, the partnerships that we've had with Eastern have really benefited the community that Eastern covers. And, you know, Joe mentioned the Quail Valley work that is ongoing and will continue. That's been very important for both of our organizations to advance the sewering in that area. And I also want to just mention how Eastern staff stepped up to assist us with addressing agricultural community with some of our TMDL requirements. We could not have done what we have accomplished with regard to the Canyon Lake and Lake Elsinore without the input and expertise of Eastern Municipal Water District. So I do want to recognize and thank district staff and to thank the board of directors for all the hard work that you have done to work on water quality issues in our area.
Thank you, Hope. And again, we appreciate all your efforts over the years, and we wish you well and health and happiness in your retirement. I also wanted to congratulate the Regional Water Quality Control Board on their selection of Jane Joy to succeed your role as executive officer. we look forward to working with Jane as well.
Yes, absolutely.
With that, President Pauley, the recommendation is to adopt the proclamation to honor Hope Smythe for her service to the water industry.
Very good. Do I have any board members that wanted to say anything while Hope is on the line?
Sure. I could just comment that I spoke yesterday, commented on at SAPA, because she's really helped SAPA in a number of endeavors as well, and I commented that she really helped steer that agency, that board, to help improve our communities in EMWD. So I appreciate your service and wish you the best in retirement.
Thank you, Director Slauson.
Would I take that as a motion to adopt the proclamation? Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Director Record seconds. May I get a roll call, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Very good. It passes 5-0. And again, Hope, thank you for all you have done for Eastern. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. President. Okay. Thank you.
Very good. I would like to, if there's no objections from my fellow board members, I would like to move up item 6A, which is the Hemet Unified School District State of the District, if we could, Joe.
Absolutely, President Pauley. So with us today is Dr. Christy Barrett, who is the superintendent of the Hemet Unified School District. And it's a pleasure to have her today to provide you with a brief update on the school district activities.
Very good. Dr. Barrett, please. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to be in person and get to interact in this way. I will not take much of your time. I guess my purpose today is to share with you a bit about where we are as a school district and then some future hopes. One of the silver linings of COVID is that we've needed to learn to do business different and rethink the way that we reach out and engage with people. And so we have an annual event similar to you, our state of the district. And in the past, we've invited community leaders, business partners, et cetera. However, this past year, in not being able to do that, we needed to find a creative way to get the message out. So I have that here for you today. But it also made us begin to think about who is it that we are inviting to that event. And for me, it was an aha, and that it was a missed opportunity, and that we had not been inviting elected boards that are part of the larger communities and service that we do together here in the Valley, specifically Hemet, San Jacinto, but broader, right? We're part of Riverside County. So with that, I would want you to know that you all will be receiving an invite for this upcoming school year State of the District, and I hope to see you there. We not only share the great things that we're doing for our community, but I typically put you to work in some form or fashion to get your input, and that the input that you provide is very helpful in just giving us some direction. So with that being said, this is from this past year, and in getting creative, we went and purchased these little video brochures, and so when you open them, you get to see me, and just in case you don't get enough of me today, you can play this multiple times if you like, but this is a brief video, just an intro, big picture of what it is that we are doing and we've accomplished as a school district on behalf of our students. And then on the inside panel, there is a link for some additional videos that talk about things such as Measure X, which is a recent general obligation bond that we've passed, and tell you about the projects and other things that could potentially be of interest to the community, as well as just to larger constituents that should have an interest in public education. So with that, I'll leave these with Joe. Also, if you do have a place of business, or if you just have a need to watch it multiple times, we do have a little charger in here for you so that you can charge it and reuse it. For those of you who would like to be ambassadors and advocates for the work that we do in Hemet, if there is a place that you can display this, we would be just greatly appreciative for your willingness to do that. So with that, if there's any questions, I'm happy to field it, and I will give these to you if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So for the board, and then for any leaders in your team that you'd like to give them. Thank you. Any questions at all?
Any questions, comments?
No, thanks for being here.
Appreciate your time.
Personal outreach.
Absolutely. Have a great day. Thank you
all. I want to just also just thank you. I know we do interact. People don't realize that water districts and school districts interact a lot. We have a lot of educational programs that we do. We have our art competition every year. So I do appreciate the partnership we have, not to mention that you're good customers of ours. I know you have a lot of facilities that we provide water and wastewater services to. So there is a good partnership, and I do appreciate you coming.
Well, thank you.
I will see if we can repay it someday by coming to one of your board
meetings. Thank you. Well, like I said, I just, you know, silver linings, right, and that this is an opportunity and something that I think just personally as the superintendent can do better at, and just that outreach and making sure that we have a two-way dialogue that's consistently Absolutely. Going. So thank you so much.
Thank you
appreciate
so much.
Your time.
I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. With that, we will move on to item 3, which is our executive reports. Mr. Mawad, good morning.
Good morning again, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is attached to your packet. Under new and ongoing items, as you're aware, on July 22nd, Governor Newsom signed budget trailer bill AB-148, which allocates $985 million in funding for COVID-19-related water and wastewater arrearages to the State Water Resource Control Board. The legislation defines the COVID-19 relief period between March of 2020 and mid-June of this year. In order to collect accurate figures of the statewide total for drinking water and wastewater arrearages, the State Board will be distributing survey to all community water systems this week. Funding allocations will be based on the results of the survey, and the State Board has until the beginning of November of this year to allocate the arrearages funding, or at least to commence the allocation. AB-148 mandates that the State Board prioritize funding for water arrearages, small community water systems, and customers with the largest arrearage amounts. If sufficient funding remains after the disbursement of funds for drinking water arrearages and revenue shortfalls, the State Board will develop and implement a program to address wastewater arrearages starting February of next year. So we will continue, obviously, to engage with the State Board and provide them with our information as far as arrearages accordingly and pursue funding. Also, separately, as you're aware, the Senate last week struck a deal on a large bipartisan infrastructure package. The agreed-upon package totals $550 billion of new spending and includes generous sums for water and wastewater infrastructure. The $8.3 billion associated with the Western Water Package, previously passed by the Senate Energy and Natural Resources, remained intact in this larger package. It includes several items of interest to EMWD, including $1 billion for water recycling projects, $250 million for desalination projects, $400 million for water smart programs, and over $1 billion for water storage, groundwater storage, and conveyance projects. In addition to the package, the package contains $55 billion for water infrastructure administered by the EPA. This part of the package includes $23 billion for state revolving fund, and over $4 billion for PFAS remediation of drinking water systems. Also of interest to EMWD is appropriation for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and specifically the Environmental Infrastructure Program. This is the account that helps fund EMWD's desalination program. The Army Corps construction-related projects are receiving $5 billion, and a subset of that in the amount of $200 million will be dedicated to the Environmental Infrastructure Program. So at this point, the Senate infrastructure package will be considered on the Senate floor this week, and several amendments will be debated and voted on. The expectation is that it will be completed sometime by the end of the week, which will then send the measure to the House for consideration. How the House will handle the bill is still unknown. However, based on recent actions in the House, there is an appetite for a much larger infrastructure package. We will continue to monitor the evolution of the infrastructure stimulus funding. Also under new items, as the board is aware, EMWD will be hosting Congressman Takano for a briefing followed by a tour of water infrastructure in Mead Valley next Wednesday. Representative Takano was successful in securing $1 million in the House Interior and Environmental Appropriations Bill for the Mead Valley Booster, a facility that will help improve water supply reliability and fire flow for the growing yet disadvantaged community of Mead Valley. Staff from the Office of Supervisor Jeffries have also confirmed their attendance for next week. Under items of interest to the board, you may have noticed recent construction completion of SoCalGas, a compressed natural gas fueling station along Trumbull Road. Eastern currently operates 9 heavy-duty CNG vehicles with up to 30 needed for conversion within the next 10 years. Our vehicles, CNG vehicles, have been so far fueling 8 miles north of our Paris headquarters or when available other public locations when operating in other parts of our service area. Over the past several years, we coordinated with SoCalGas to advance to the CNG fueling station along Trumbull Road. The gas company agreed to accelerate and advance construction of the fueling station at this location based on EMWD's proximity, as well as the fact that it is accessible off of the I-215 freeway for public use. Construction of this fueling station is essentially complete, and we expect operation later this month. With completion of the facility, EMWD is positioned to defer approximately $1 million of capital construction for our own CNG fueling station. We're also now better positioned to navigate pending California Air Resources Board rules. Also, for the board's interest, last week I had a meeting with Mr. Juan Perez, the Riverside County Chief Operating Officer, to discuss issues and initiatives of common interest, including wine country, sewer infrastructure, Winchester land use changes, and Mead Valley infrastructure needs. We agreed to schedule quarterly coordination meetings between EMWD and county management staff to collaborate on various issues of interest. Also, we are exploring the feasibility of establishing an ad hoc committee that would include county supervisors and EMWD board members that would potentially convene on a biannual basis. I will be bringing this item forward for discussion at the executive committee this month. And finally, I did want to remind the board, our assistant general manager, Jeff Wall, this is his last board meeting today. He is retiring after 28 years of service at EMWD at the end of the week. So we truly appreciate his service, and we will be having a luncheon immediately following the board meeting in the boardroom, and we will reorganize the room accordingly for social distancing. With that, that concludes my report. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Joe, I had a quick question. I don't know if I understood you correctly. We're not going to build our own CNG because we have it down the street, right?
That is correct, President Pauley.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we are able to defer and in fact, eliminate the need to build our own CNG fueling station with this fueling station being completed by SoCalGas. We have been engaged for many years basically requesting that they prioritize and accelerate this fueling facility. In the absence of this station, we would have had to construct our own.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for clarifying that.
Joe, in your report, you talk about recycled water and storage is 36% of total capacity. Is that about right for this time of year? I'm just curious if we've got more in storage, or it seems about right.
It's a good point, Dr. Record. We are tracking it very closely. Up until the last couple of weeks, it was slightly below average. Okay. But the last couple of weeks, we've seen it slightly uptick, increase, and it's consistent with historical averages. Having said that, our staff have put together a plan in case we decide to augment the recycled water system with excess brackish water. We have not decided to initiate that plan yet, but we're tracking the levels closely.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Anything else?
Yeah, I have a question on the AB 148.
Yes.
Do we anticipate receiving enough funds to cover the delinquencies?
That's a great question, Dr. Armstrong. Initially, the State Board is going to consider water arrearages. Now, we have both water and wastewater arrearages. They will only fund, according to the legislation, wastewater arrearages if there's remaining funds after they allocate funds for all the water arrearages statewide. So we'll have to see if the state funding will cover all of our arrearages. Also, the eligible period is only up to June 15th of this year. And as we know, we've continued to accrue arrearages past June 15th. The executive order on a moratorium for shutoff does not expire until end of September. So I don't believe, personally, that the state funding is going to cover all of the arrearages just based on the current guidance in the legislation. but we're going to have to continue monitoring that.
I guess you'd be developing an approach to deal with, if it's not enough, what we do with the remaining outstanding amount.
Absolutely. Once we have a reconciliation, we will bring back forward a plan to the board for consideration. As you know, we're not strictly relying on the state funding. We've also rolled, we'll be rolling this week a portion of the arrearages onto the county's tax roll. That is a subset. We also continue to engage with the county Riverside as far as ARPA funding that may be allocated to arrearages. And we've also recently engaged the city of Moreno Valley to see if they have any funding, because a significant number of customers that are in arrears are, in fact, within the city. So we continue advocating on multiple fronts to secure sufficient funding. But end of the day, as you indicated, if there is a gap, which I expect there will be, we're going to need to come up with a plan and come back to the board and update you accordingly.
Very good. Thank you, Joe.
Thank
you. Appreciate
your
report this morning. Laura, do you have anything for us?
Yes, I have one item today.
Okay.
So we have had some longstanding agreements with our adjacent cities to help them out by billing their trash. And so over the last several years, we've been working towards getting out of the billing business. The last one in play was the city of Paris, and I'm glad to report that on August 1st, thanks to CRNR, they are going to be taking over the trash billing for city of Paris. April and her team did a great outreach. They sent out three letters in English and Spanish and really clearly outlined what customers can expect from the transition. So I really appreciate all the work that PGA did. Also, you know, obviously finance and customer service and IS, there was some prorated billings that had to be done, so they had to program the system. So it was a team effort, but I'm glad to see this kind of moving out of our bailiwick so we can get to the business that we do. So that's my report.
Thank you very much. Nick?
I have no items today.
Very good. Ms. Alexander?
No items.
You have no items? Mr. Wall, you better have something for your last board meeting.
I do have something. We have a presentation coming up, but truly my pleasure to work for Eastern and support this board. I've been very blessed by a very stable organization, as largely due to this board, stable management structure, and it's just been a phenomenal career, and I can't thank the board and the district enough for my time of service here.
Very good. And I'm going to take a presidential prerogative here for a moment. I unfortunately cannot stay for the luncheon today. So I just want to say thank you for all you have done for Eastern. I mean, I cannot count the number of times that we've had operational hiccups on the weekends at 3 in the morning, wherever, where you actually came in, you took care of it. I can't say enough good things about how you've treated this district and your responsibilities to our customers. So, Jeff, I just want to say thank you from me personally. I'm sorry I can't make it today, but congratulations. I do hope you enjoy retirement. I am as sad as you are. We used to joke about we were going to put in the EMWD firing range. We were never able to accomplish that, but there maybe in your retirement we could work on that, as you could do that as a customer of ours. So.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Very good. With that, we will move on to our consent calendar. Are there any members of the board that would like to pull an item on consent for further consideration or a separate vote, or has a question? Seeing none, I will look for a motion and a second on the consent calendar.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Corona.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Director Slauson. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That is a 5-0 vote. It will take us to item 5 on our action calendar. 5A is to approve and authorize an agreement with Dudek for final design and engineering service for the Judson Transmission Main Project, an appropriation amount of $315,000. Mr. Kowalski, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. President, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here to present to you our Judson Transmission Main Project. By way of project overview, the project is located in northwest Moreno Valley along the Paris Boulevard corridor, south of Hecox Street. The proposed project advances basically three pipelines, two transmission facilities and one distribution main. Those transmission facilities are aligned in the yellow highlight along Paris Boulevard and the green highlight there on Judson Street. The proposed facilities will help improve conveyance in the area and help balance the water storage facilities. In addition, we look to advance a distribution main to ensure we're in and out of this area for good once our pipelines are complete. We have an old distribution main that's nearing the end of its useful life. So again, we'll button up all the pipeline facilities in the area. Again, stakeholder coordination will be important, especially our community, our residences in the area. So we'll ensure we minimize impacts during construction for these pipeline projects, as well as the upcoming tank project that will advance, the Judson Street tank. The proposed effort looks to advance final design. We're looking to continue with the design engineer of record, DUDEC. DUDEC recently completed our preliminary design report, so we're looking to, again, continue the process. And DUDEC was previously competitively selected for our as-needed services contracts, and they have a great past performance with us. They recently completed the Sherman Road Brackish Pipeline, which is currently under construction. The final design effort itself involves completion of contract documents or plans and specs, as well as conceptual traffic control plans. Those are a key element of this project, and the effort will take us through the bid phase services of the project. This project does not come without challenges. The Paris Boulevard corridor is just a highly traveled corridor, and we'll need to ensure that we're well coordinated with the community for those community impacts, in addition to advancing traffic control plans, which will be key to this project. We'll have to develop a public outreach plan to ensure that all the stakeholders are on board. There are also a fair amount of utilities in this corridor, so utility congestion will be a challenge for us to navigate our pipe alignments along this corridor. By way of schedule, upon approval today, we look to advance the final design as soon as possible and complete the design in early 2022, then take the project immediately into our bid period. And upon a receipt of bids, we look to advance to construction and complete the project in late 2023. This is a photograph of the north extent of the project at our North County tank there on the right, looking south along the Paris Boulevard corridor. Our recommendation today is threefold. We look to, one, advance a contract with DUDEC for the final design of this project in the amount of approximately $180,000. Two, advance administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete this work. And three, our request today is additional appropriation in the amount of $315,000, taking the total project cost to date to about $714,000 to take us through the bidding phase of the project. With that, are there any questions today?
Questions? Do I have a motion?
I move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Record. May I get a roll call, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And it passes 5-0. We will go on to item 5B, which is to thank you, sir, for the presentation. 5B, to approve and authorize an agreement with Hazen and Sawyer for $249,000 for the preliminary and final design of the Paris Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Biosolids Loadout Facility Improvement Project and an appropriation of $342,000. Good morning, Mr. Stone.
Good morning, President Pauly. Good morning, members of the board. Thank you for the introduction. The project, we're going to go over a few different things related to the background, the condition assessment, some alternative evaluation, scope of work for our engineering consultant, schedule, and ultimately a recommendation. The project is located at the Paris Valley Water Reclamation Plant, highlighted on the photo to the right. So the background, we dewater biosolids at that site, and those dewatered biosolids go to a hopper, which are then loaded into the truck and ultimately conveyed off-site for disposal. The loadout hopper was constructed in 1992 and has seen some significant deterioration. With that deterioration, we've had to, staff, O&M, has had to been spending a ton of time out there maintaining, cleaning, to keep it operable, as well as having staff attend the trucks as they're being filled. So we conducted a condition assessment in March of 2021. The condition, there's photos along the way, as you can see. The mechanical gates, the hopper itself, are substantially corroded. Only one of three gates is operating at this point in time. The hopper itself is starting to deteriorate due to the corrosive nature of the biosolids. They're bulging, which in turn is affecting our load sensors. So the way the hopper works is we have load sensors within the structure itself that as the hopper fills up, it hits a certain weight, and then we know it's time to fill the truck. Well, because of the bulging, those are not functioning quite like they should, which requires the operator to stand there and do a visual assessment of the truck to determine the full load. What this leads to is the possibility of a short load where we haven't completely filled the truck, therefore increasing trucking costs, or an overfill, which then means we actually have to have operators climb up on the truck, physically unload material into the drying beds to handle it twice. In conjunction with the main hopper, the control facilities, the MCC and the control panels, same vintage. Parts are hard to come by for repair, so as part of the project, we would like to upgrade those as well. So we went into an alternative evaluation. The first evaluation alternative was to repair what we had. Due to the extensive corrosion, that repair is not a feasible option. Alternative 2 and 3 are very similar related to the hopper itself, which is a full replacement of the hopper facility. Where alternative 3 differs is where we do the actual weighing. In alternative 3, we would like to install a weigh bridge, which the truck drives on, so essentially a giant scale for the truck. This will lead us to, we can keep the dewatering process going while we're loading trucks, which is an enhanced flexibility, as well as it lets us dial in to maximize the load within the truck itself. You can see the cost estimate there between alternative 2 and alternative 3. Alternative 3 is approximately $500,000 more. The recommendation is alternative 3. The outline of the points there is, from the extra truck trips that I spoke about a few minutes ago, we're looking at approximately a $46,000 a year savings, operator attendance, the staff time spent with the facility, about $22,000 a year. Cleaning up the overflow or after we've had to unload it is $7,000 a year, leading us to a total amount of about $75,000 a year of savings, and that $500,000 would be paid back after 7 years. One other thing to note in a discussion with our Director of Water Reclamation, Matt, he said, obviously climbing up on the trucks, they're not meant for staff to be up there, so it is a safety concern when the staff does have to do the unloading and reloading. So, as I said, we had an outstanding engineering consultant. Oh, flipped one extra here. Hang on. There we go. Hazen and Sawyer, they'd perform the condition assessment as well as the conceptual design and develop the alternatives. We would like to continue with them to complete the preliminary and final design and through bid assistance. You can see there the outline of the scope of work that we have asked for them from them. So our next steps, should the board award the contract today, we would begin preliminary design immediately and complete final design in March of 2022. And ultimately, the advertisement for construction will coordinate with operations since we're going to have to take the facility offline and construct a temporary feed system for the solids. So our recommendation today is an award of contract to Hazen and Sawyer in the amount of approximately $250,000, administrative award of necessary contracts to help complete the facility, and an appropriation of $342,886 to fund the project through final design and bid phase. And that brings me to the end of the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And one, so on the control panels, which was 1992 technology, your plan is to completely revitalize those and bring them up to today's standards, correct?
Yes, sir.
Which will probably look much different than the 1992 version, correct?
A little bit.
Okay, so that's part of the entire package. Very good.
Yes, sir.
I have no further questions.
Oh, who decides who gets to get up and unload?
I think they draw the short straw.
Okay. I'll move that.
All right. Moved by Director Record. Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call cut vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-2-0.
Thank you.
We We'll go on to item 6. We did 6A already. We will go to 6B, which is the operations and maintenance branch highlights for fiscal years 2019, 20, 20, and 21. Mr. Wall, sad moment for your final presentation,
yes.
But make it a good one, okay?
I will try. Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. It's my pleasure today to kind of give you a view into the day in life of all of the skilled trades people working at Eastern, roughly 270 employees that are out there every day, keeping our systems operating, repairing as necessary, and ensuring that we continue to provide reliable service to our customers. So I'm going to pass this off to my three department heads behind me. I have David Garcia as the Director of Water Operations. David Brown is the Director of Maintenance, and Matt Melendez, our Director of Water Reclamation. They're doing a great job, they and their staff. I just can't be more proud of the team that we have here at Eastern. So with that said, briefly, as you're aware, 2020 was a very challenging year. A lot of new things came our way, learning how to deal with COVID, and that did impact our field staff. As you can see, these guys are working in different environments, and they're all masked up and trying to socially distance to the extent possible. Obviously, if you're in the pipe, in a pipe trench and trying to put fittings together, the six-foot separation is no longer possible. But we did our best to work around all of the challenges that were presented by COVID, and again, just extremely pleased with how the staff adapted and continued to keep things operating on behalf of our customers. You guys know all this, but it is a large system. When we had an R&R model conducted years ago, the consultant said it was one of the largest number of asset counts, sheer asset counts of any system he had ever modeled in an R&R model. And you can see by this graphic here, we have enough pipeline to reach from here to New York City and a third of the way back to our agency, or in my world, can go all the way to the childhood farm I grew up in Illinois and all the way back to the district following our pipelines, if you want to put in that perspective. We have over 150 pump stations between water, wastewater, and recycled water, 79 tanks. It's a very significant system, and takes a lot of effort to keep these things up and running, and we've got the right team to do that. As you would guess, most of what we do on the O&M team really just totally aligns with the strategic plan. We've got to provide reliable service, so we have to keep it running. We can't let the water system become depressurized. If that were to happen, we'd issue boil water orders that only the state can retract. So it's very important that we stay on top of these issues. One of our other main things that we do is we protect environmental health. I would say we are the protection agency, if you want to put it in that perspective. We clean up the water and ensure that human-borne pathogens are not transmitted as a result of anything that we do. Maintaining efficiency it helps us keep our costs down, and then making sure that we make the right investments as we're doing repairs or replacing equipment. That's one of the main jobs of these guys here behind me. So it's a great team. Can't be more proud of them. Last year, we completed about 85,000 work orders between all the different staff in the three departments, and that's a huge undertaking, as you would imagine. Some of them are as small as an oil change, to as large as a major waterline repair out in the street or whatever the case be. So with that, I'm going to turn this over now to David Garcia, and he'll talk about some of the highlights in our water operations department.
President Pauley, members of the board, good morning. It's my pleasure to introduce the highlights for the Water Operations Division. The Water Operations team is responsible for the production, treatment, and distribution of our potable and recycled water. In 2020, we distributed almost 88,000 acre-feet of potable water. Over 17,000 acre-feet of that was water that we treated at our filtration plants, our Hemet and our Paris filtration plants. We also are responsible for the production of our groundwater. We produced over 21,000 acre-feet of groundwater, which 7,130 acre-feet of that was treated at our Paris 1 and Menifee desalters. I also had the unique pleasure of entering the San Jacinto Tunnel. I'm not sure if any of you have had that opportunity. If you do, it's quite an experience. to be inside that tunnel. I jointly entered that tunnel with Metropolitan staff and did the seepage measurement back in February, March of 2020. And we accounted for 4,419 acre-feet of groundwater seepage, which comes out to about $3.5 million from Metropolitan Water District. Well, thank you. Thanks, Nick. Too far up. All right, so we went over that. Sorry about that. Our water operations team is responsible for the water operations treatment team is responsible for the treatment of our potable water. And they're also responsible for some of the maintenance of our treatment plants. Some of the photos that you see here is our water operations team conducting that maintenance. The photo that you see down to the left is our operators conducting membrane repairs and testing at our Paris water filtration plant. They also do this at our Hemet water filtration plant. The photos of the chemical tanks on the right were photos of tanks that were leaking and were repaired by a contractor and oversaw by our water operations team. They're fiberglass reinforced tanks that needed to be refurbished from the inside. So that was conducted by our team. And the photo there in the middle with the gentleman with the power washer, he's at our Hemet water filtration plant cleaning the flocculation basin there and then conducting inspections of the inlet pipe there, checking for corrosion. We're also responsible for the valve maintenance and cathodic protection. We exercised over 16,000 valves. We have over 58,000 valves in our system, ranging from 2 inch to 60 inches in size. This generally takes about 5 years to do as we go through that cycle. However, we do exercise our strategic valves more frequently. And the purpose of that is that we need to make sure these valves are going to work when we need them. So exercising them is very important. We also performed 588 cathodic protection tests. The cathodic protection system protects our pipelines and our tanks from corrosion. We conducted over 400 tests on our pipelines and 180 tests at our water tanks. We also recorded over 700 groundwater measurements throughout their groundwater basins, and that's a key task that we conduct and share with our Water Resources Division. That information gets back to them for their modeling and calculations. Our Integrated Operations Center. This is the eyes, the ears, and the heartbeat of the water operations team. It's staffed 24/7, and they monitor both the potable and recycled water systems. We responded to over 856 water calls for pressure, outages, and water quality. Of that, 193 were for service repairs, 39 for water main repairs, and 25 for water outages. The IOC also coordinates the energy shutdown events that occur. We had 7 of those events where we shut down the system or portions of the system for a period of time during high energy use per our agreements with our energy response company. The water operations team also manages the recycled water operations. They are responsible for the distribution and for the sales of recycled water. We sold over 31,000 acre-feet of recycled water. We conducted 770 recycled water inspections, and we performed 93 cross-connection tests. These tests are conducted on a rotating basis. Typically, every 4 years, we hit a certain amount of customers where we shut down the system to ensure that there isn't a cross-connection between the recycled water system and the potable system. We coordinated over 10,500 backflow tests, and that's an annual requirement from the state. And we oversee the 30 recycled water ponds that we have. So you see there's a photo left down at the bottom is a backflow device for a business. And we have the cages around them. And as you're probably pretty aware that these things need to be protected because we have individuals out there that like to take them. The Water Operations Group is also responsible for our inflatable dam. They operate the inflatable dam. Here's some pictures of the recent replacement of the bladder. The bladder was 15 years old, and this was the replacement has been completed now. However, these are pictures with it being removed and the prep work to install the new dam. The inflatable dam is used to prevent recycled water from entering Lake Elsinore during recycled water discharge events. And with that, that concludes the water operations team's highlights. And I'd like to turn the podium over to our Director of Maintenance, Mr. Dave Brown.
Good morning. I'll be discussing some of the highlights we've had over the past year or so. We've had challenges with COVID, as Jeff mentioned, but staff were able to work through it very well, and we accomplished quite a bit. At East Hall and Booster, staff upgraded the pumps there. The pumps that were there were obsolete. We were unable to get parts for them. So staff fabricated and installed new pumps, and they are more efficient and increase the capacity of the facility. Staff also replaced two motor control centers, and the one that I'd like to discuss is Cayo Pina Colada Lift. This was a lift station where, as part of the lift station assessment, it was identified as needing replacement. So staff was able to repurpose a motor control center from a decommissioned lift station and install it at this site, and it saved approximately $110,000. We're always looking for ways to do that. If we're decommissioning sites, we're always looking to recover what we can and repurpose it as a cost savings to the district. At Pat Road Booster, we replaced two variable frequency drives. Pat Road Booster is one of our main pumping facilities, bringing water from the south to the north, and it's currently in the process of gas engine replacement project where they are replacing the gas engines. And in order to prepare for that, we replaced our two VFDs, which were obsolete, and then we also reconditioned the motors shown there in the photo on the bottom left. They're 700 horsepower motors. We reconditioned those motors to make sure the station was fully operational and ready for the shutdown for when they take the gas engines offline. At Hemet Water Filtration Plant, the photo on the top left is a photo of the bowl filters. These are the pre-screened filters for the microfiltration. And we had experienced several leaks on the bowl filters, and we looked into replacing them as part of an OFA project. But as we started looking into it, we were unable. The system we have is obsolete, and the new system that we were planning on reinstalling didn't exist yet. It's not on the market yet and won't be for a couple more years. We were trying to go with a like system to minimize piping modifications, and we were unable to do that. So mechanical services staff was able to repair the housing, modify it, and then get it back in service. And so it saved, for now, approximately $120,000. And what it does is it buys us some time. So we have another 3 to 5 years to actually come up with a plan to determine how big the scope of the project is going to be, because this piping reconfiguration could really add up cost if we're unable to find something very similar to this. So we had quite a few construction projects over the past year. Staff rebuilt the Grant Ponds and inlet diversion channel after the storms that occurred in 2019, and had it all prepped for when and if we get rain again. We're ready to go. So that was quite a bit of work. They also raised 15 pressure regulators above ground, and this engineers out a safety hazard that we face. So where possible, we're trying to eliminate safety hazards, and this is one area we can do that. And then as part of the Moreno Valley treatment project that's going on, treatment and equipping project, staff, field services staff, installed 1,000 feet of pipeline ahead of an adjacent building going up so that we could get our pipeline in the ground before the asphalt was laid, preventing us from having to go back and dig up the new asphalt and replace it. So field services department does not do a lot of new construction. They're mostly repairs, but in this instance, they were able to help out and get us in ahead of the paving. In San Jacinto, for our wetlands education facility, staff designed and constructed the viewing deck out there. And obviously, we haven't had much use of that yet with COVID, but hopefully in the near future, we'll have some use of that. And you can see on the photos there, it gives quite a good view of the ponds and provides ADA access. And PGA intends to use Eagle Scouts or other community groups to perform maintenance on the viewing on the deck as part of the community service and outreach.
Can I just stop you there? That was a project that I recommended, and I'm so thrilled that the way that that came out. So I just want to say kudos for a great job on that.
Thank you. At Ethernet Lift Station, staff rehabilitated the wet well. The liner had failed and the lift station wet well. And so staff worked with a contractor to rehabilitate the wet well. And as you can see by the photo, this took a lot of coordination. There were quite a lot of moving parts on this. Staff was able to make that work, and we expect the new liner in the wet well to last 20 to 25 years. So we're moving forward on projects like this that we can handle in maintenance that don't require a full-on engineering design. So in an effort of always looking for continuous improvement, maintenance staff, along with information systems, develop mobile applications to improve efficiency and workflow. A key one that we developed was the leak report. And the leak report is used by field services staff when repairing pipeline leaks. So what this does is it puts an application in the hand of our field staff that they're able to identify specific items of the leak and then bring that data back into our GIS system so that we can create heat maps and then identify potential pipeline repairs needed in the future. So it gives us it makes it visible, the status of our current system. And then for Mobile Maximo, this Maximo is our asset tool that the district uses to manage all of our assets and our work orders for that system. So staff developed Mobile Maximo, which puts it in the hands of the employees, allows them to use speak to text, which saves a lot of time with typing, so for in their work logs. And it also, as the picture shows on the right there, you can see it gives you the direct location in the photo so they can drill in and actually see where the work needs to be done. So it really makes us more efficient overall as a group. And then finally, the board approved the SCADA upgrade for the IOC for the SCADA system. And this project is on budget and on schedule. We recently completed the factory acceptance testing. This was a little bit tricky because of COVID. We weren't allowed to travel and actually attend factory acceptance testing, but they were able to complete that. And we are expected to receive the equipment starting next month with the goal of being complete by March of next year. So we're on track with that. And that is the end of my presentation, so I'll turn it over to Matt Melendrez. Thank you.
Could we check the board had any questions on your portion? I had one.
Yes.
And that is, and I don't know if we can get the data for this, but occasionally I see other water districts, especially in, say, Los Angeles, for example, that have a lot of breaks and blowouts and things like that, and I'm always proud that we don't, have a lot of those problems. Is any statistics someday that you might bring back to the board of the number of water main breaks that we have versus other districts in Southern California? I don't know if that's available data, but it seems like we do a pretty good job of not having those problems.
Sure. So, well, we can definitely look into that. I intend to, along with our GIS manager, Andy Regalado, bring back a presentation for HydroMapper to show you be able to show you the breaks and how we assess that information. But I will definitely look into that and see, yes.
Where we stand with some of the larger retail water agencies in the Southern California area, knowing that I think because we do spend the money on maintenance and maintain our system that we I'm guessing, probably have less of a problem in that area than others. But I'd love to see if you could get maybe a little bit of data on that for future presentation.
I will. We'll go ahead and put that together.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I wonder if also you could include some sort of discussion or comparison on what other agencies are spending on ongoing maintenance, how our programs compare. Because I think in the future, like some of these cities are not devoting the funds for
that was my point.
Ongoing maintenance. Yeah, so we could see how ours would bode in the future.
Sure,
anyway,
absolutely.
Just might be an interesting piece of data for the board.
Yes.
So thank you very much.
Great
presentation, by the way.
Thank you.
Mr. Melendez, good morning.
This makes me realize how tall Dave really is. Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to share what we've accomplished rather than asking you for money, but showing you what we did with it. So starting with the collections crews, over this last 2-year period approximately, we've cleaned about 884 miles of sewer lines, and that puts us about on track to do the whole system in 4 years, which is good by industry standards. We've inspected a whopping almost 20,000 manholes. We don't own 192 wet wells, but we assisted the mechanical group on 192 events cleaning wet wells. And then we did a number of other maintenance tasks for raising manholes to grade that get paved over, patching the streets. A big task here that sometimes in the winters takes a lot of our time is fixing subsidence to the roadway that always affects the community. We had 38 of those over the last 2 years with some of those bigger rainstorm events. One of the biggest projects that we completed, this was a huge repair on Case Road. You might remember one subsidence led to us discovering the siphon had failed. And so this turned into a very large excavation. We did this completely in-house and replaced both barrels of this siphon. Took us about a week and a half, if I recall, with the support of the city of Paris. And our electrical group, we were able to provide them with some 12 kV electrical training. That's the 12,000 volt distribution switchgear that keeps the reclamation plants running. This was some critical training to keep our skills sharp so we could make very quick responses in emergencies and be able to complete our maintenance and keep staff competent and safe and confident in what they're doing. Staff really appreciated that one. You've heard me a number of times talk about our PLC upgrades. We finished the project at Paris. That was 20 PLCs, and you can see in the cabinet, each one of those red wires that were landed in the old panel on the right go to a piece of equipment and either record information or control something. And so when it came time to replace and rewire these panels, all of the operations staff have to be outside manually running these equipment, writing down data. And sometimes this would even go overnight into the next day just due to the large number of points we have to land. So this was a huge effort by the staff, and they successfully completed the whole project with no incidents. This project occurred at our San Jacinto facility, and it was in support of our groundwater reliability plus project, so we could pilot different membrane technologies. So Dave Brown's group assisted with this as well in installing the concrete foundations, digging some trenches, and then the maintenance and electrical staff at San Jacinto installed the equipment, hooked everything up, did all the plumbing, and even connected the system to SCADA so that water operations and the consultant could do some remote monitoring and data collection. At Moreno Valley, we did a digester cleaning project. We did two digesters. They were about 1.3 million gallons each. And while we had a contractor come in and actually process the solids, this was another large effort by operations and maintenance to shut them down, dewater a million-gallon tank while also keeping up with the normal daily loads we have to keep up with, purge the tank, and get it ready for cleaning. As you can see by the pictures on the right, there's a large amount of material that's ultimately removed and disposed of and giving us digester capacity back. At Temecula, for the last 2 or 3 years now, just as with the water operators, we now have membrane cassettes that we have to maintain. So each fall and winter, we start making our way through these cassettes, and staff pulls them. They spend quite a bit of time cleaning them and inspecting them. Overall, it takes about 11 weeks each year to get through each system. And thankfully, so far, we've gone through this a couple times now, and the system's running really well. We haven't actually discovered any damaged membrane tubes, which is amazing considering the sheer number of them. There's 33 of these cassettes on site, and so far, everything's in good shape. At Paris, we did an aeration panel membrane replacement. This was at plant 3. There were 424 aeration membranes that were replaced. This is another one where we had contractor support to do the membrane replacements. But again, this is a large effort by staff to reconfigure the entire treatment plant to move loading around, take a large basin offline, drain it, and you can see the difficult manual labor that goes into cleaning the grit and solids that remain out of the bottom. And that was all I had. So thank you.
Any questions?
If I could add one comment. Matt, could you go back to slide 28?
I wish we had a keyboard.
We are, at this point, finished piloting the advanced water treatment system at the San Jacinto plant, and engineering is currently evaluating whether they want to do a second phase of piloting. But I would encourage you, if you get the time, to make a request, and let's have you guys get an opportunity to see that pilot equipment. We did a lot of effort. Roxanne designed the paint scheme. PGA did a great job with the signage out there, the boards. Really happy with the work the staff did and the installation. It was really set up so we could give tours to city officials, school district officials, the medical community, et cetera, and then COVID hit. So a lot of the tours that were anticipated to happen have not occurred, but it was a really nice-looking pilot. We put a lot more effort into it just for that reason, given that we're trying to get the community to accept what Eastern wants to do with our advanced water treatment program and IPR. So if you get the opportunity to come see that, it'll probably be dismantled within the next 6 to 8 months. So I just want to share that with you.
I think this was an excellent presentation, and what a great presentation to go out on to really highlight, you know, what happens in your division. It's remarkable to me that, I think you said 207 the employees do all of this work. It's just the vast amount of work, the varied amount of work. You can see it in here, the skills, the innovation, the where they're coming up on their own on how to solve these things on the bowl filters or the applications and whatnot. I mean, it's the skills of employees that work in a water district, the technical and creativity, I don't think is recognized. But this really, really does show it, and it shows the great leadership. I'm blown away on the valve exercising that you're getting through 16,000 valves a year, and you're rotating through it in 5 years. You know, I mean, this is really remarkable. And so I just give you, you know, compliments on what a great division this is and the results. So it's a really good presentation.
All right. Thank you very much.
President Pauley?
Yes.
If I may, we have a couple of technical difficulties for a moment.
Uh-huh.
Take a break.
If that's what you would like to do,
just
then
a
let's
couple
take
moments.
About a 10-minute break, and then we'll get on to Laura's presentation.
Thank you.
No, not a problem.
Yeah, and as far as the
meeting, I understand our technical difficulties are past us, correct?
Yes, that's
correct. We have everybody back on the line for the board meeting. We are now going to go to item 6C, which is our workforce overview profile. Good morning, Laura. And this is an item that that I asked to be brought before the board. So the floor is yours to talk about our workforce and the fact that I think this board wants to maintain a workforce that is a very healthy one, open to all, and that we provide a great work environment for our employees here at Eastern. So I will let you proceed.
Thank you, Director Pauley, members of the board. So I think it's appropriate that I follow right behind the group that just gave the presentation so I can show you what our workforce that is doing all that work actually looks like. So I'm going to get started here. So some of the information that we wanted to bring forward as we prioritize for the district, one of our priorities, and I'll go over that, our guiding principles, diversity and inclusion, and as Director Pauley mentioned, we want to make sure we're inclusive of a diverse workforce. What are those priorities, and what's the importance of that to generational differences within the workforce? How do we look like reflecting the service area that we serve? And so we'll show those stats as well. How do we prepare for retirements? And then our training and engagement, our outreach, and how do we do succession planning to address our future retirements? So one of the strategic priorities for the district is workforce excellence. So we want to recruit and retain highly qualified, diverse, and productive employees by providing competitive compensation opportunities for career development and investment. And along with that, we have our guiding principles, which the board has supported and helped develop. And one of those is our leadership, our integrity, innovation, community, respect, safety, and transparency. So we keep these in mind when we focus on the efforts that we put together for our workforce and developing our workforce. So diversity and inclusion and belonging, what does that mean for our workforce? So there's been many studies lately you'll see posted by many organizations and surveys done on the importance and what does that really mean. So diversity refers to characteristics that are different for each one of us and what makes us unique. Inclusion is being able to feel like you're included, you're part of that group, part of the norms, and being welcomed, and belonging, a sense of acceptance within the group. So some of the efforts that we have put together, I wanted to go ahead and just kind of emphasize on those. In 2006, with the board's support, we created our values and beliefs. And then in 2017, we replace those with the guiding principles that we just went over. And then in 2018, we put together some professional conduct training to teach our employees what the expectation is of professional conduct, what's acceptable and not acceptable, not necessarily the legal required training, but a step above that. We also did our 2019 inclusion training, which we, through working with a legal firm, we're able to put that together, and it was more of respecting differences within the workforce. And then in 2021, of course, we put a new training in place for diversity and inclusion, and we provided those materials, I believe, to Director Pauley for review, what the emphasis was going to be on that, and it was more, again, of inclusion and accepting the differences of each other. In addition to that, we also have training that's required. So we have some the harassment prevention training that's been put in place, and we follow those to make sure we're compliant. We do abusive conduct training, not how to be abusive, but how not to be abusive. And then 2018, our supervisor training to make sure that our supervisors are aware and address any issues that in regards to sexual harassment or any type of harassment related to identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. So why do we focus on diversity and inclusion? This is a survey that was actually just published in January of 2021, showing the importance of that diversity and feeling part of the group as inclusion by generation groups. You'll see here that Generation Z, the importance of that is highly 76%, the next group, which is the millennial group, at 72%, Generation X at 63%, and then we've got baby boomers at 46%. And just to put in a relation of what our workforce looks like based on those generations, you'll see them to the right-hand side. So our current workforce as of April of this year reflects we've got, you'll see there the 2% of Generation Z, and those are pretty much our new workforce coming in. And our millennials at 30%, our Generation X at 49%, and our baby boomers at 19%. Questions on this slide or any others prior to this one? All right. So we had some assistance from Gordon in pulling this data, and we're appreciative of his help. So this is the census data that's posted by the County of Riverside. And what we did is we took the data 30-mile radius from the district, because that's generally where we do most of our outreach for career fairs, colleges, universities, and the service area that we service. And the majority of our employees are all within this radius. So you'll see here that the 2000 county data reflects, here's the breakdown of the service area we serve by ethnic group. And this is self-disclosed, and these are the terms used within the census data, so we just took it from there. You'll see that the breakdown here, and if you can see the breakdowns at the bottom or the legend at the bottom of the breakdown, but if you have any questions, if it's hard to see, I'd be more than happy to answer that. To the right-hand side is the 2019 county data. This is the last data that was posted, so we weren't able to find anything more recent. But you'll see the shift here in the service area. The profile has changed a bit, and you'll see the breakdowns have moved a bit here too. So this is the district's workforce profile. So this is our 2000. This is based on data we collected from new hires back in 2000, and this is self-disclosed data. So we had quite a bit that didn't disclose at the time, since this is not mandatory, it's voluntary. This is data that we were able to collect. You'll see the breakdown here. And then to the right-hand side, again, this is self-disclosed, self-identified data that we've collected from our new hires. You'll see the shift of how we've shifted, similar to what's happened to the service area that we serve. Questions on either one of these slides? All right, so we wanted to show here in this slide the progression that has happened with our workforce. And to point out, our average tenure of our employees is about 12 years, so it's not like flipping a switch. It's a slight progression that occurs. And so in 2000, you'll see the numbers that are here and what the breakdown of that looks like. And then here is our 2021 data. And then next to that, you'll see our recent new hires. This is from 2019 to 2021. And you'll see the difference here in the shift in our workforce profile. Again, similar to the area that we serve in our customers' profile. We also pulled data from American Public Works as to what do utilities look like as far as gender, what their workforce looks like. And you'll see here that the last survey that was posted in June 2020 reflects that about 85% of the workforce is male and 15% female. To the right-hand side, you'll see our workforce. And you'll see that it's 68% male and 32% female. So in addition to our focus, what we do is we look at projections of retirements in order to do succession planning and training and employee development. You'll see here that the actual retirements by calendar year are in the turquoise to the left-hand side. And then to the right-hand, so you'll see we had a big number in 2017, and that was a slight spike due to the change in our MOU. And then in to the right-hand side is what we call our highly probable workforce that may retire. And what we do is we take, based on prior retirements, we take their age and the numbers of years of service, and if it equals or greater than 80, then we consider those as highly probable to retire. Based on those numbers, we have about 47 employees that are highly probable to retire this year. We've had, and you'll see in this slide here, we had 10, and this was through May. As of today, we have 14, the new updated figure. We think that a lot of that has to do with COVID. There were quite a bit of retirements that were put off, and people were a little nervous about going. And so we've seen some retirements that have been postponed. You'll see the projections kind of dwindle a bit here and then go back up in 2025. We've broken down our workforce down at the bottom by age groups, and you'll see here within this area here by tier, and just based on their age of 50, we've got about 216 employees that are eligible. Not necessarily that they will go, but that they are eligible to retire. Questions on this slide? So what do we do with this information? Well, we prepare for these retirements and the change in guard pretty much and some of the trades, which is our focus on either key positions or trades that are hard to fill. So we develop professional development, leadership coaching. We do one-on-one sessions, succession planning. We do have a supervisor academy that we were even able to go move forward in 2020 through COVID, which was good. We had some graduations that Joe took place in acknowledging their accomplishments. We align those retirements during our strategic planning process and as well as during our budget. So we prepare how many positions do we anticipate that are going to be vacated, how many do we need to fill, will we still need those similar classifications or different classifications based on the nature of the work. And then from there, we develop training matrices and plans for staff. We also have our apprenticeship program, which we are thankful that the board fully has supported. We had our two first apprentices complete the program in the electrical group and currently have one apprentice in the maintenance group. We have two that are approved for fiscal year two in this budget cycle, and the only reason we weren't able to do it this year because of COVID and the curriculum that was available through Metropolitan. But we do plan on moving forward on that the next year. So what do we do to do outreach within our community to make sure that we're inclusive of the community that we serve? We participate in career fairs with local high schools, colleges, universities. We participate on leadership boards with Mount Sinai Central College to put their curriculum together. We have partnerships with local universities such as Cal Baptist, University of UCR, and Cal Poly. We are very involved with the Cal Poly Engineering School. We've done tours where we've had them out here and gave them kind of what does EMWD do, what are some opportunities in the water industry that are available to you, and we focus on doing outreach when we do our internships. We have the Day in the Life program for the City of Paris where we bring in young adults, high school age, that go through and see what do we do. So we take them to the lab. We take them through different areas to see the different type of work that is done here at the district. We have our youth ecology program, which the board fully supports, and we're appreciative of that. We've been able to hire some very good employees from that program. We also have our internships and our apprentice program again, and I'm happy to report that our internship program is up and running again after COVID, and currently we have 4 interns here at the district. We partner with the MSJC Water Technology Program, and we actually have some staff that actually teach some of those classes. So we're very involved with that program. And then we also have our volunteer program, which through the MSJC program, we bring them in to get their hands-on experience. And I'm happy to report that that should be up and running next month again after being placed on hold due to COVID. So we continue to evaluate opportunities and look at other ways that we could do outreach and develop our staff. We recognize the importance of a diverse workforce. We think that it brings innovation, different ideas, and makes everybody feel included in part of the group. We'll continue to seek opportunities, community outreach, and certainly would be open to hearing some feedback from the board or if there's anything that you feel we haven't covered or opportunities that we have not taken advantage of. And with that, I will take any questions, feedback, or comments that you may have.
Director Slauson.
Sure, I have a question. Can you kind of run down what human resources procedures are with regards to ensuring that there's not a gender bias or a racial bias in terms of the hiring practice?
So it's a good question. So we made changes back in 2016, I believe. What we did is we test individuals that are qualified. So they send in their resumes, applications. We review those to make sure they meet the minimum qualifications. In addition to that, we will do the appropriate testing for the position. And what we do is we remove the individuals' names off of those tests, and then those come back to the hiring manager to review. And then once they've selected those individuals that are the most qualified, then we provide the names back along with all the other information to proceed forward for the interviews. We also have a diverse panel, so we ask that there's at least three individuals on the panel when they're hiring, and that one not be within the same department. We also encourage to reach out to other agencies to bring in somebody else from the outside to be part of that panel. So we also have training that we do for those that are on the panel to make sure that they're aware that they're supposed to be focusing on the abilities, the experience of the individual that they're hiring. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and there aren't pictures on their resumes. Okay.
No pictures.
Oh, that sounds good. Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the board on this presentation?
39% eligible for retirement. Does that give you any concern?
Yes.
That's a big part of the workforce.
Yeah, so it's 39% that are eligible. So that's at age 50 for those that are in that tier one and tier two. And that's why we put together the effort to do succession planning during our strategic planning process and our budget cycle. That's why we put together the apprenticeship program, because in some of these positions are a little harder to fill. I have to say that the district has a very good reputation, so when we put openings out there that are don't require, higher, like a certificate or a degree or professional level, we get anywhere between 700 to 1,000 applications. So we don't have a hard time getting applicants. It's finding the right ones. But in positions that we have a hard time filling, that we anticipate we have knowledge transfer to be done prior to those individuals retiring and leaving, we ask for their assistance, because there's a lot of things that aren't on a piece of paper or in a book. And so we work with the directors and the AGMs to put together a plan of those projections within each one of the departments.
Okay. Very good report. And I agree completely that the importance of a diverse workforce is really important. And it's not that we hire based on that, but we want to make sure that if there's a category that doesn't have the ability or isn't, whatever the word is, we want to make sure that the opportunity is there, and we do everything we can to make everyone have an opportunity to work here, because it's a great place to work.
Absolutely.
Dr. Armstrong?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a great report and really shows the importance of succession planning. And you really have a really robust succession plan. It's pretty obvious. And I just wanted to compliment you on the Supervisor Academy, too. I think that's a really good element of it. Often, you have really good employees that work hard, and you're like, this is the next person to move up, but what experience do they really have in that? And so to give them that really sets them up for success. So I think that's a really good creative addition to the plan.
Thank you. We also have, we used to, pre-COVID, have quarterly symposiums. So we would invite leads, not necessarily supervisors, but those upcoming individuals that have the desire and have been or have the abilities to move to the next level. And so we will hold them in here, and it's lunch and learn, right? So we bring speakers in to speak about leadership and conflict in the workplace, how to address those things. So we do focus on giving them those skills in their toolbox, their tools, so that the next level isn't so scary. Yeah. And once they do promote, we do one-on-one coaching when we have individuals that maybe don't have as much experience, and that's worked out well. So thank you for that.
So I just want to say, first of all, Laura, I think this agency is very, very fortunate to have you as its director of human resources, because I think you do an excellent job in making sure that we have a top quality workforce and we check all these boxes and we have an employees that seem to stay here a long time, and we have a provide. I think this board wants to provide a very friendly, capable work environment for folks. So I congratulate you on that. I understand, did we recently or have we scheduled something to meet with a group called WeWorks, which is...
Yes, President Pauley. Okay. We have had discussions and meetings with WeWorks, and we will be bringing forward an item for the board consideration here in the near future for participation.
Okay. Which is another kind of getting younger people into our workforce. It greatly concerns me that we find the correct folks that want to work here and fit into our environment, but I want to make sure that we are reaching some of these folks that are promoting younger people that may not have that are maybe not the college skill level, but certainly want to be part of our daily workforce here. So I appreciate you doing that. Anyway, congratulations, a great report. Thank you for doing that. I would like to kind of make this a yearly update with the board on these numbers, because Laura touched on just a whole swath of things that I think this board needs to know pretty much on an annual basis. So. Very good. Thank you for a great presentation.
Thank you for the kind words.
Thank you, Laura.
We will move on now to item 6D, which is our strategic plan and priorities update. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning again, President Pauley, members of the board. Wanted to give you our annual update on our strategic plan and priorities. Also wanted to discuss the path forward to updating our triennial strategic plan. As the board is aware, our current plan was adopted back in June of 2019. It establishes a framework for district initiatives and priorities in support of our strategic vision and mission. And this strategic plan entails many of the things we, in fact, talked about today, whether it's the O&M highlights that were given or the succession planning and recruitment discussion that we just had. The foundation for our strategic plan is our standards of excellence, and that is to provide safe, reliable, economical, and sustainable services to our customers and to our community. Based on that foundation, we develop our strategic priorities, and within those strategic priorities, we identify specific actionable projects with target dates, with assigned staff and responsibilities. Again, as I'll get into here shortly, as well as there is a detailed attachment to your board letter that has a significant amount of information as far as what those actionable initiatives are. So when we adopted the triennial strategic plan back in 2019, we had 28 strategic priorities that were rolled over from the prior plan. And then in 2019, we added additional 19 priorities. In 2020, we added 3 priorities. And this year, we are adding 5 priorities that I will discuss briefly with you today. And then the current plan extends till the end of the current calendar year. So as I'll discuss later on, we do have a proposed timeline to update the plan going forward. So as I mentioned, our strategic priorities were developed based on our principles. And those priorities include highly reliable water, wastewater, and recycled water service, protection of public and environmental health, superior customer service, sound planning and operational efficiency, fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment, being an exemplary employer, and effective communication, advocacy, and community partnership. Looking at highly reliable service, there's a number of strategies in support of water supply diversity reliability. The board is very familiar with many of these initiatives, including our Groundwater Reliability Plus program, inclusive of our water banking, as well as our purified water replenishment initiative, our desalinization program, specifically completion of our Paris 2 desalter, the effort with Metropolitan on the integrated resource plan, and other initiatives. The next slide also highlights some of those priorities relative to supporting the water supply and diversity reliability. And that includes our Paris North groundwater program, as well as our groundwater sustainability plan for San Jacinto. Underwater use efficiency, as the board is aware, we also have a priority to advance landscape transformation initiative, and we recently provided an update to the board on our latest rollout of contractor certification under that effort. Under the priority of protection of public and environmental health, we are adding a priority this year of the Quail Valley Sewer System Subarea 4. As you may recall previously, we had a priority for Quail Valley Subarea 9 that we completed, the first phase of sewering. This year, given our effort to advance a solution for Quail Valley Subarea 4, as well as our success in securing funding, in addition to our need to secure additional funding that we're engaged on with the state and other stakeholders, we believe this is an important priority in support of the strategic objective of protecting public and environmental health. And also, we're currently developing our climate action plan. Under the priority of superior customer service, we did complete three of the priorities as identified here, including the biannual customer survey, which was the results of which were presented to the board earlier this year, as well as a priority under technology to look at securing email billing notifications, and that will be part of our CIS implementation. And we also completed the establishment of our recycled water customer portal that is currently online. Under sound planning and operational efficiency, we did complete one of the priorities under improving operational efficiency in the finance department, but also currently we have undertaken an initiative in development services, and Corey Wallace is involved, as well as IS and others, in developing a succession plan for our CityView legacy system, as well as how can we better streamline our processes to better serve our development community. So that evaluation is currently initiated. Also, under sound planning, operational efficiency, as mentioned earlier this morning by Dave Brown, we did deploy our GIS application for tracking leaks. That's been working effectively. We also, under administration of groundwater management, we are developing a system to be able to better manage water for our water banking and SARCUP program. So that process is underway. Also, under sound planning, we are proposing two new initiatives. One of them was mentioned earlier today. Both of them were mentioned earlier today in the O&M highlights. It's the maximum reporting tool to be able to access and manage those work orders by maintenance quickly, as well as the field mobile application, again, to have that information in the field. And so we are in the process of completing those two priorities as well. Under fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment, there's a number of initiatives and priorities. Wanted to highlight the update on the infrastructure replacement, refurbishment, long-term funding strategy. As the board is aware, as part of the adopted budget, there is now an R&R component. But beyond that, we're developing a long-term financing plan, including a model that will incorporate the R&R needs for the district. Also, under proportionate cost of service, we are in the process of finalizing and completing a connection fee study to update our connection fees, and we will be bringing that forward to the board later this year with our recommendations. Under exemplary employer, Laura touched upon many of our initiatives and policies and practices to be an exemplary employer. But under that, under workforce excellence, as you're aware, we did complete negotiations with the union regarding the MOU and as well as the extension of that MOU. But we also have an opportunity through O&M to do work across training for water operations, essentially expose the water operations staff to different types of treatment technologies, rotating them among the various treatment facilities that we have, as well as desalination facilities. So we think that's a great opportunity for training our staff. Under effective communication, advocacy, and community, a number of initiatives that we have, including development of a comprehensive outreach and communication master plan that we are currently working on. Also under the same priority, if you look on slide 15, wanted to highlight our partnerships, specifically our MWD policy initiative. We're closely engaged with Metropolitan on their rate refinement process, as well as their integrated resource plan, as well as various initiatives with Metropolitan that are important not only to us, but to the entire water industry in Southern California. So we continue that engagement. We also, under advocacy, have our ongoing Latino community outreach effort under advocacy strategic priority as well. So I know I went through this very quickly, but just to summarize, to date, we have completed 10 high-priority strategic efforts. 10 more are anticipated to be completed by the end of this calendar year. So we are making good progress on all of our priorities. As I mentioned, we are recommending 5 new priorities that, and these are some of them are multi-year priorities, such as Quail Valley, sewer system for Subarea 4 will be a multi-year effort, as well as a development services succession plan for City View, as well as the other priorities that O&M branch has put forward, the maximum reporting tool, field mobile application, and the cross-training that I mentioned. So beyond the current remaining time for the triennial strategic plan, we want to present you with a timeline and the path forward for updating our strategic plan. We will be having a senior executive management planning meeting later in August. We are going to brainstorm some of the game changers that are going on, whether that's the impacts of climate change and drought on what we do, legislation that may be emerging, or regulations, and develop and identify new opportunities for us to pursue. We will then bring forward our thoughts and our timeline to initially to executive committee as well as the board in October. We want to engage the board, and we want the board to provide your perspective into our strategic planning effort. So there will be a board workshop early November to get your perspective on those game changers and the priorities going forward. And then, of course, once we have that developed, we will be holding a town hall meeting with our staff, sharing with them our proposed strategic plan for the next 3 years, getting feedback. We'll do any type of adjustment calibration and then bring back the adoption of the new strategic plan to the board for early December. So that, and I do want to mention that this has been obviously a collective effort with Laura Nomura and Nick and Jeff and everybody working on this. So it's a really a team effort to be able to advance the strategic plan on behalf of the district. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions for Joe? Very good. Thank you. I look forward to those board workshops and board participation as we move forward.
Thank you.
All right, that will bring us to item 7 on our calendar, which is to receive and file various reports. Can I get a motion and a second? Second by Director Record, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes on a 5-0 vote. With that, we will go to our calendar review. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I have 2 new events for your consideration today. The next Riverside County Water Task Force meeting has been announced for Friday, August 27th, and the topic is Water Matters. That will be held virtually as well as in person at Western Municipal Water District beginning at 7:30 a.m. that Friday, if anyone is interested.
I'll attend that.
Thank you.
And I will as well.
Thank you, Director Slauson. The next event is the Western Science Center's Science Under the Stars. That date has been set for September 11th, which is a Saturday at 5 p.m. This year's event will be held at the DVL Community Park Soccer Field, and it will be the Science of Music. There is a flyer attached on the last page of your calendar review if you'd like to attend. The district is a sponsor for this event, so we'll be working to fill those tables.
So I'll attend, but I'll probably not sit with the district, nothing personal. I'll provide opportunity for other people to be there.
Thank you, Director Record.
I also will attend that.
Thank you.
I will also not sit with Director Record.
Thank you. The board's master calendar for the next 2 weeks is listed on pages 2 and 3. And I won't go through each of these. Please let me know if you have any questions or changes on any of these items. We also have on page 4... some upcoming conferences and key events that the board has been invited to participate in, and it shows participation. If you would like to attend or need any more information on any of these items, please let me know. Our upcoming board and committee meetings are on schedule. for the next 3 months, and those are shown on pages 4 and 5. Our interagency meetings are also listed for August through October. And just a reminder that the Rancho California Water District joint meeting for August was moved to August 10th, as shown, and that is a virtual meeting. Are there any questions or additions to the calendar?
None. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
We were going to go to our board attendance reports. We will start with Director Armstrong.
Attended the quarterly deferred comp oversight committee. We were able to meet with our investment manager in person this time, and so that was nice, but went over performance. And one of the remarkable things about this is the participation by district staff in the deferred comp program. I guess Laura's got it, but I think it's somewhere around 97% of the employees at Eastern participate in deferred comp, so that's really quite an accomplishment. The AQUA budget subcommittee just reviewed budget performance for 2021 and year-to-date for 2021 and for 2020. And then the pension liability ad hoc committee, we met, and I think it's going along really well. Staff is really narrowing in on some good approaches, and I think a multi-pronged approach, and something that is really showing leadership, I think, in the industry. And I think that the next step is another look at a few things and then bringing something back to the board. I don't remember if it was September or October for the board to see what staff has come up with and the ad hoc committee's come up with. So good progress
there.
Thank
you very much. Director Armstrong, Director Corona.
I had my monthly update with Joe, our general manager, and that was good. And then EMWD presented our SARCUP program to the Rancho California Water District Engineering Committee, and Linnea did the presentation mostly on that, and it was an excellent job. And that's all I have.
Very good. I attended the quarterly deferred comp meeting, as Director Armstrong reported. That is, I'm really thankful that we have a great HR department here that gets our employees involved with this. The more you can get involved early on in your career here, you'll be surprised as your career advances how much your savings and investment have gone up. So I'm really proud of the work we do there. Southern California Water Coalition lunch, that was a first one back in person. It was a wonderful event. Danielle from our staff was on the panel. She did an outstanding job on water affordability. It was a good panel discussion. Mayor Aquanetta Warren from Fontana was on the panel, also talking about diverse populations and water affordability. So Danielle did a great job of that. Joe was there. It was kind of Eastern Old Home Week. Paul Jones was there. Laura was there. Debbie Cherney was there, who is, I don't know if you all realize, she is a member of the Riverside City Public Utilities Commission now. So it was a really good event and good to be back in person events. So Western Riverside Council Governance Executive Committee, mainly a long closed session about some of the legal issues left over from the PACE program, which we are working through and hopefully get that behind us at WRCOG. And then the Pension Liability Ad Hoc Committee, as Director Armstrong already stated, good work on that, and look forward to bringing a good recommendation to this full board sometime in October. So I want to thank on that. Laura and John Adams have really done a spectacular job of guiding that through. So appreciate that. And Director Record.
off-month committee meetings at Metropolitan, the most notable meeting was at OPT, where the long-awaited Shaw report on the workforce climate at Metropolitan was presented and discussed. It was made available to the public a week prior. Very long discussion and good discussion, a lot of good questions. And overall, I mean, the executive summary is that Metropolitan is a good place to work. They have some issues that are being worked through right now, and there are some recommended changes that staff and the board are taking very seriously, and we'll determine out how to implement those and how we move forward. So all in all, I'm pleased that the report is out and we have items to work on, and so we'll get going and try to get this behind us.
Good. And Director Slauson?
Yes, I attended SAPA Commission meeting yesterday. We appointed Brenda as Vice President of OWOW and recognized Hope Smythe for her service at the Regional Board. And I'll add to that, Joe mentioned earlier that Jane Joy will become the new Executive Officer. And Jane worked here for a number of years and was really good, and so knows both the regulatory side and the regulated side, and knows the challenges that each party faces. And we just had a presentation on the Disadvantaged Community Grant Program. So.
Very good. With that, we'll go to director's comments or future agenda items. Does anybody have a comment?
Well, a couple of things, and I sent you an email, Joe, but I understand that Nevada passed legislation requiring that the Las Vegas area remove non-functional turf by, I believe it's 2026, and I'd really like to get a sense of what was involved there, and I mean, that's a big deal. Obviously, it's been an issue of mine for a long time, so I just want to kind of monitor that and see if there's anything that applies to us. Certainly, I'm not proposing that we support or sponsor legislation at this point, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how that rolls out.
And thank you for sharing that, Director Record. In fact, we do have a call scheduled with SNWA to get a little bit better insight into their journey to get that legislation enacted, and what are the drivers, and what did they learn along the way. So Jolene Walsh, myself, and Linnea have that call with SNWA, and so we'll be happy to come back to the board and share with you what we learned. But you're right, it's a very much a industry-leading legislation that was enacted, and be curious to see what they can share with us on what led up to it, and how effective is it being. And you're absolutely right, it does talk about a timeline to remove non-functional turf within the SNWA service area by 2026.
Thank you. Very good. With that, I will ask our legal counsel if we have a need for closed session.
We do, Mr. Chair, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 as identified on item 10 of the agenda.
Very good. We will go to closed session now then.
Ready.
And I'll ask General Counsel to give us a report from closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met in closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss two items of potential litigation. Reports were given to the board. No formal action was taken. That concludes my closed session report.
And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting to a regular meeting on Wednesday, August 18th, 2021 at 9 a.m. We're adjourned.